Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Hard times have been hitting the Ohio Historical Society for a long time, but last year they took a 42% hit from $13.5 million in 2008 to $7.9 million this year in state funding. On top of that, the executive director, Bill Laidlaw, died while on a family vacation at Martha's Vineyard last summer, and last month, Bert Logan took over the job. Moving to Ohio from Massachusetts, where he had been president of the USS Constitution Museum since 1995, and Bert arrives at a time of great change, meager funds, and celebration as a society marks its 125th birthday this year. Bert has joined us in the studio today to talk about his plans in the coming years for the Ohio Historical Society. Welcome to Ohio, and welcome to the show, Bert.
Well, thank you very much, Ann. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have you. I've been to the USS Constitution Museum before. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. It's a wonderful place. Why make this move to a place that struggles so right now?
Well, I think it's all a matter of how one looks at the situation. Yes, the Ohio Historical Society clearly has challenges in front of it. We had challenges at the USS Constitution Museum. Mm-hmm. But I felt that after 14 years there that we had accomplished many of the things that we set out to do. And professionally, I was looking for a new opportunity, personally looking to see a new part of the country. And when I was contacted for this about 9 months ago, the pieces just eventually fell into place, and really pleased to be here.
There's something that's popped up recently, a proposed tax checkoff to fund a matching grant program mm-hmm. for the Ohio Historical Society. It raised about $700,000, and it would be used to kind of trade – well, you'd use it to get matching grants from local historical societies or local historical organizations. It's been getting some criticism, a little bit of mixed reviews in the newspapers, at least editorials, pages. And I was wondering how common is such a fund – is a funding device like that, and what are people doing around the country?
Well, it is. I think it's being used in other states as well. But what we would like to really see this used for, we feel that one of the most important responsibilities that the Ohio Historical Society has is to help other organizations throughout the state to spread the word of history and to help residents throughout the state. So we would turn this into a matching grants program if enacted. None of the money would stay with OHS, but instead it would be used to go to historical societies, historical organizations around the state in a matching format so that they can do some of the important work that is so much required at the local level to let people around the state experience and really get to be part of Ohio's wonderful history.
How much do the local societies and organizations depend on the Ohio Historical Society for funding? What's the relationship now?
Right now, the relationship is largely one of training. We have an Office of Local History that works closely with historical societies as well as working with the Ohio Association of Historical Societies and Museums. And we estimate there are about 700 or 800 such organizations around the state. And we have so much expertise on our staff in terms of caring for collections, developing programs, putting together exhibits. And we feel that the most important service that we can provide right at this moment is to make our staff available in this wide variety of activities for local societies. That coupled then, if the income tax checkoff bill is passed and becomes law, would even give us another opportunity to assist the local society.
Are the local organizations struggling like the statewide one is? You know, we're seeing the cuts at the state level. Are they seeing the same sort of commensurate cuts at the local levels?
Many of them are. In fact, some are probably impacted even more than we have been. Their funding varies. Many are dependent upon county funds, which, of course, have suffered the same as other public sources of revenue. So it's a real time of great need among the historical organizations throughout the state. And anything that we can do to help in some way fill a bit of that gap that may have been caused by a reduction in local funding, we really want to step forward and do that.
Holly Zachariah from the Columbus Dispatch reported in an interview with Terry Davis, who's the president and CEO of the American Association for State and Local History, said that the business model for history organizations has long been broken. Do you agree with that? And if you do, how would you change it?
Well, I think it's a very complex situation. many historical organizations have depended on public funding, and as with a number of organizations, I'm sure that's being revisited, not only in the historical realm, but other realms of service to citizens and individuals. But I think it oftentimes boils down to a delivery of service. And I think that my own feeling is that history museums, historic house museums, historical societies, maybe we need to rethink a bit the way we're delivering our message. Even though other museums are challenged, I think in general, children's museums, science museums, even art museums, are seeing a better way to connect with the public. And this is one of the things that we tried quite successfully at the USS Constitution Museum in Boston, was to rethink how we connect with our audiences and to have more engagement, particularly among family members, and found that to be quite successful. So I think oftentimes it's a question of looking at the services that we're delivering and rethinking how that might be delivered better in addition to reexamining the business model.
Holly, also, well, I guess there you are changing that. Ohio Historical Society is going through changes right now. The Ohio History Center is being renovated. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your plans are for that?
Well, the renovation that will be underway shortly is for Collections Learning Center, which will allow visitors to the Ohio Historical Center to interact in a more intimate way with collections, to have a more personal experience. And our staff is working to develop this multi-phase project that will unfold over the next few years. So it promises to be quite exciting.
Now, the whole idea of the interactive exhibits and that sort of thing has been lauded in some places. I mean, the Ohio Supreme Court has a pretty elaborate visitor center with a lot of interactive parts to it. And the Ohio State House recently renovated its visitor center in the basement and made it a lot more interactive. And there's been some criticism of that. The people worry about this bells and whistles mentality that why can't we just stick with the basics? If you care about it, you'll come.
Right. And I think there is an element of truth to that, that sometimes the interactive itself may begin to be the end rather than a means. And I know that personally I've seen exhibits where I think that the designers and the educators and others involved may have sort of lost sight and lost focus of what they're really trying to do. But I believe where an interactive exhibit is most successful is where it is able to elicit dialogue and conversation. And again, I go back to particularly children's museums and science museums. I think that's something they've done so well, that a social group, be it a family or a Cub Scout or a Girl Scout or 4-H, whatever it may be, when they go, there are opportunities for not only members of the group but intergenerational conversation and dialogue to occur. And if there's anything that I believe that history museums have done for too long has been to focus more on the concept of simply artifacts with very heavy text, very heavy label copy. And I think it just hasn't generated the type of dialogue, conversation, interaction that other museums have found so invigorating for the audiences.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Bert Logan. He's the new executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. You know, too, we know a lot more about how people learn and what engages them in the learning process. Not everybody learns rote. Not everybody learns by reading.
That's right.
Now, you just joined the show in December. Mm-hmm. What sort of input have you had in this process? Because most of it had probably been underway in terms of the planning.
Well, I think that one of the most important tasks I have for the next few months is to listen and to find out as much as I can. I've started conversations and dialogues with the staff. I'll be going around the state to meet with other groups, certainly listening to our volunteers and just trying to understand as fully as I can where the Ohio Historical Society is at this point. And I think that those are the people that I'll be talking with who best know the challenges confronting us, as well as some of the ways to maybe solve some of the problems, some of the solutions that we're looking for. So it's pretty much a listening period.
It's a big state.
It is.
Compared to where you came from, there's a lot of territory to cover.
Yes, it probably fit New England within most of Ohio. Right.
How does that affect the challenge? I guess in preparing for this, I was sort of surprised to learn that Ohio has the largest state network of historic sites and museums in the country. I guess that was in a recent press release. Is that even practical anymore to have that much to care for?
Well, it takes us back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of our relationship with local historical societies. One of the things that the Ohio Historical Society has been doing for the last year and quite successfully has been forming site management agreements or partnerships, if you will, for a number of these sites around the state. We're providing our expertise in terms of programming, exhibits, collections care. But the local communities are now stepping forward and bringing perhaps fundraising expertise or a level of enthusiasm, community involvement, that regardless of how hard we tried from Columbus, it's just difficult to generate that type of organic buy-in at the local level. And we're seeing these local site management agreements really begin to take off. And so we think it's a way to apply our own expertise from the historical society's side of the table with the local community, and the result will be a much better visitor experience for everyone to the sites.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but what I understood was that Bill Laidlaw had said that we will never, ever, ever sell off any of the collection, that it's in perpetuity. We will keep it. We'll take care of it, and we'll get it out there as much as we can. Is never ever too long of a time to consider selling off some of it?
I can only say that anything which would leave the collection would be looked at very, very carefully, both in terms of its value to the collection, what it represents for the history of Ohio. But anytime something would ever leave the collection, the proceeds from it, if it was sold, would be returned to continue to support the collection. We would never go to the point of selling items from the collection to pay operating expenses or salary or electricity. That is pretty much recognized as a professional standard that we would uphold.
Okay. We're going to have to take a quick break. My guest is Bert Logan. He's the executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. If you have questions or comments about the direction the society is taking in this, its 125th year, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
And good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for joining us this morning. You can get more radio. The WOSU Winter Membership Drive begins soon. If we raise $20,000 before February 4th, we'll take one day off the drive. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree for details. And thank you for your support of WOSU. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at noon for Governor Strickland's State of the State Address. Listen live as the governor details his plan for Ohio's future. After the speech, hear reaction from a variety of key lawmakers. Tune in for this live special coverage of the governor's State of the State Address from the State House News Bureau tomorrow at noon on WOSU 820 NPR News. 36 degrees in downtown Columbus, steady temperatures right around 35 this afternoon, and a chance of a little rain mixing with snow, an accumulation of less than half an inch tonight, and a low of 25 degrees. And the National Weather Service has issued a flood warning for Pickaway County until 3 o'clock this afternoon. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Bert Logan. He's the new executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. He moved to Ohio from Massachusetts, where he was the president of the USS Constitution. Was it a museum? Is that
yes.
what you called it?
Museum.
USS Constitution
right.
Museum, mm-hmm. which was a boat. Well, a big, huge, really huge boat.
Well, they're actually two separate entities. The ship itself, which is owned, maintained, and operated by the United States Navy, mm-hmm. is still on active duty. And we, the museum where I worked, were a private nonprofit organization. So it was a public-private partnership between the Navy and between the museum that carried on the exhibits and the programs and maintained the collection on behalf of the ship.
You know, we were talking earlier about selling off when I was talking about selling things off, I meant the collections. But what about the sites themselves? What's the philosophy there?
Well, the philosophy, first of all, it's governed by law that almost all the sites are state property. Whereas the Historical Society itself owns the collections, in many cases within the sites, the property itself is owned by the state. There have been occasions where the Historical Society has returned a particular property to a local group, but it's always done out of that spirit of education rather than a financial gain or financial transaction.
Okay, 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for Bert Logan, he's the executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. And Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for coming to Columbus. I'm aware of some of your budget difficulties and everything, and I've always thought the facilities there off of 71 could be used for meeting rooms and for state facilities. I know a lot of state agencies are looking for places to have off-site meetings and so forth, which would also be educational as well as a place that, you know, that have a short retreat. And I thought your facilities would be excellent for that if you just market them in that way. And you probably increase the traffic and maybe the revenue, you know, for your admin offices.
What about something like that?
Well, I think that's certainly something worthy of consideration. And part of what we're looking at with the Collections Learning Center will be those types of opportunities. We do want to make the facility as open and available as possible to as many people as possible. So that's certainly going to be under consideration.
Does that answer your question, Bob?
Nothing more. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Lou, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about the airport terminal building and the Ohio History of Flight. And I was going to bring that up. So, hey, Lou, I'll let you do it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
You bet.
Dayton area was able to get through a lot of work from their congressional delegation, the aviation trail established in Dayton, so they preserve historic sites, and that, you know, local taxpayers aren't the ones that have to maintain them. I've been there, and it's nice. But what I was thinking about was the old airport terminal, which was built in 1929, and is probably the only one remaining from that era. But also, that was one of the places where their air rail transcontinental transportation system was a connector, and it may be the only one left. It's the equivalent, basically, of the Pony Express. So it didn't last long, but it was the first time you could travel coast to coast in 48 hours. The terminal's still there. The railroad station that was across the street is no longer there. But it seems to be there are also a couple of hangars there from that era. In fact, one of them still has the logo from the Transcontinental Air Transport System on it. And the Ohio History of Flight Museum is defunct, but the collection is still in the hands of the Ohio Historical Society.
Which is getting bumped out of the warehouse, I think, right now.
Right.
So it seems to me that there's a possibility all these things could come together with a museum dedicated to civil aviation, which is rare, and a lot of these artifacts are lost. It'd be a shame if that collection were broken up and no longer available for any purpose. It seems to me there's an opportunity here.
Okay. I mean, there's one issue is the congressional funding at the federal level. Does that work for the model that Ohio uses right now?
It worked for the aviation trail.
Okay.
This is a series of sites that are on site. They weren't moved to any place, but there were sites that were associated with the early days of the Wright brothers. Okay. One of them is the only bicycle shop. They had three of them, I think. There's only one that remains in Dayton, the house they lived in, and right around the corner there was a print shop that the Wright brothers apprenticed at and operated a printing business for a while.
So, Bert, is that something that would work here?
Well, it's hard to say at this point, and I'd certainly have to do a bit more research and checking myself. But I think that the most important thing to bear in mind is that the Historical Society, in terms of having taken ownership of some of the planes that were from the History of Flight Museum, that we are working to find appropriate public repositories for those. For example, I think just this past month or so, one of the Waco planes was placed on loan from the Ohio Historical Society. And when we have opportunities to find organizations that can use the collection to promote public education, public enjoyment, we certainly will entertain that.
But the apparently they've raised the rent, or they just don't want to rent it out. I think it's they've raised the rent in the warehouse, and you can't afford to pay it anymore. Where does that collection go? What do you do with that? Because it's very, very large, not just in terms of the planes, obviously, but there's also tons of documents that are being stored there.
Well, that's one of the things that we're looking at right now. And I don't have the full answer for that question, but I'd be happy to have one of our staff research that, and we can get back on that.
Okay. Lou, does that answer your questions?
Yeah, I'm glad to see this. I'm interested in this. Thank
you. Okay. All right. Thanks for your call. Hugo, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I had heard the fellow a second ago make reference to the use of the Ohio Historical Society for corporate events. I wanted to let everyone know that this last spring, our little girl had her fourth grade, about a dozen of her fourth grade friends and herself, celebrate her birthday party at the Ohio Historical Society. And let me tell you, it was astounding. It was wonderful. The work that the curators there did, you know, to help basically make it not only an educational event, but also a very, very fun party. And it tied into the things that kids, elementary school kids, are learning in school, of course, about Ohio history. So it's a little known thing that can be done and something I wanted to make sure that folks were aware of.
Hugo, how much does it cost?
Continuing. I will tell you, I don't recall. It was certainly, let's say, more than going to Chuck E. Cheese, mm-hmm.
But better for you.
And absolutely. And most of all, the fact that they were able to have people there who could tell them about the various buildings at the society, what was there in the village. And as an added bonus, the Muffins, the old-time baseball team, happened to be playing. So they got to see a little bit more of that.
Let me ask you something, Hugo, since you have a fourth grader. What do you think about the ideas of making some of the exhibits more interactive, more, that kind of thing?
Certainly the idea of when we take our kids to a museum, the tactile stuff is certainly, sticks with them much, much more. I love the Historical Society so much, though, and I like the way that the kids were able to enjoy themselves. They did a scavenger hunt, and they were able to go from exhibit to exhibit and find things and then mark them off as they found them. I'm pleased with what we've seen so far, but I'm sure if they could do more of that, I know that kids do like that.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Hugo.
Thank you, Hugo.
All right.
You know, the Society has drastically reduced its Ohio Historical Center hours to get started on that first phase of the renovation or the overhaul of its collection. I guess it's the first one, big one in 20 years. How does, that affect events like the one that Hugo was talking about, that kind of relationship with the community?
Well, without question, we'd like to be open as much as we can. And it's always a trade-off between being open at the present time, but yet allowing us to do these types of renovations that will make an even better experience down the road. So it's something that we constantly evaluate, and ultimately what we want to do is to have that experience. But groups can still come at any time.
They can make reservations
yes.
to come. So it's going to be open one day a week. Is it from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m.?
That's the
9 a.m. to 5.
9 to 5 okay. Each Saturday for the
And then the stacks or the documents.
The archives. The library.
Are open. That's still.
That's 9 to 9, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Each Thursday.
And that's compared to what? Did you used to be open 6 days a week or 5 days a week? What was it? 24 hours a week. Okay. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you've been to the Historical Center and have some ideas about how it should be changed, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Mark, you are on the air. Hi.
Hello, Ann.
Hi.
And for your guest, something which some of us has crossed our minds in terms of maybe making best use of our materials and sites as well as helping out the financial situation of the society is a lot of the historical materials that we have, particularly relating to some of the indigenous peoples who were here before the time of Columbus, are very profound, and they're even up to the UN level of significance, yet they're not very well known overseas. Like, for example, so many people visit Italy and Greece and France to visit historical sites. It seems to me we have a great potential to market our historical materials and sites to people from overseas who'd find them of great interest, but maybe there's not much awareness of that now. And one particular aspect, real quick, would be that there's been a lot of archaeological evidence that there was a lot of communication between the Ohio region and North America prior to the age of Columbus, which gives us direct ties to people in the various continents. And wondered if your the director had any thoughts on that.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly one of the – and you're absolutely right that the earthworks and the other remains within Ohio are some of the best preserved and some of the best known in the world. One of the first steps to in that direction has been the nomination of three of the sites for World Heritage status through UNESCO. If this does indeed come about, and I think that there's a very good chance that it will, it certainly could lead to the type of marketing that you're talking about, the type of international marketing, which would certainly benefit not only the visitation to the sites, but travel and tourism within Ohio in general.
You know, there are those kinds of sites. By the way, Mark, did that answer your question?
Yeah, one real quick mm-hmm. comment. And there's a phrase called unfunded mandates. Mm-hmm. One of the mandates the state of Ohio has placed upon the Historical Society is to be a repository for state records and to monitor the archiving and disposal of state records, and that's been incredibly hampered by the budget cuts. In other words, there's a records retention schedule for the various counties and municipalities, and the Historical Society is required to monitor and maintain that, but their staff has been cut so much that accountability for public records has virtually disappeared. And I think we need to restore the ability of the society to monitor the records so we can hold our government officials accountable.
It's, I guess at this point, Mark, it's sort of an issue of priorities, right, mm-hmm. Bert?
Yes.
Thanks, Mark. So how do you make those priorities? How do you set those priorities in times like this? Because there is apparently the Ohio Historical Society is a partner with mm-hmm. the state legislature, the Ohio General Assembly, for these reasons.
Right. And as the caller was referring to, it's something that's actually spelled out in
right.
the Ohio Revised Code. But there again, when the funding is not present, we have to make the best call we can in terms of how to use the resources to meet a variety of needs.
Would it be that Ohio lawmakers, when they're setting these budget their budget priorities, would say, well, yeah, that's mandated, and we're going to give you the money to do that, but all the other stuff you do isn't mandated. You're going to have to make the decisions.
Quite possibly, yes. And one of the things that we're continually looking at is raising additional private funds to supplement that from the state. And we've seen over the last few years an increase in our private funding. So it is a time of transition. It will take time to continue to increase the private support for the organization. It's been there throughout the years, but we need it now even more than in the past. So we're not relying solely on public support, but it is a large component of what we do.
And there was a 42% cut between 2008 and 2009, but that wasn't the first cuts that you've been undergoing or the society has been faced with over the years. I think maybe 8 years ago, things started to go south. What kind of cuts have been made in response to this latest big one?
Well, I think to give you the big picture perspective, our staffing has decreased from around 400 staff members full-time,
mm-hmm.
Down to about 184 full-time equivalents today. So the staff is less than half of what it was at the beginning of 2000, 2001.
And so the job that you do has to change along with that.
It does. And the government records continue to be produced. Artifacts are continued to be produced that we need to collect. There's still the demand for visitation. So it's quite a juggling act to try to allocate the diminishing resources with a smaller staff, a smaller budget, but still provide services back to the citizens of Ohio.
And now the state's facing another gigantic shortfall, as I'm sure you know about, possibly billions of dollars will be cut. Have you started work on making your case to protect what you have now from future cuts?
Oh, very much so. And we're constantly in touch with the legislature, with the governor's office. Again, drawing out and holding up what we do on behalf of the state and how important it is for a state, any state, but particularly a state such as Ohio, to maintain its heritage. We have the native sites that we discussed a moment ago. Ohio was truly the first state that was not part of a British colony to come into the Union in 1803. So it's quite unique in terms of its own state history, and we feel that it's important for the government to do everything possible to help maintain and preserve that heritage.
You know, and as things get cut, time marches on, and in 2011, they start the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. And when we return from a short break, I wanted to talk about that and talk about the plans that the Society has for that. If you have a question or comment yourself out there, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get more radio. The WOSU Winter Membership Drive begins soon. If we raise $20,000 before February 4th, we'll take one day off the drive. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree for details.
And good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at noon, Fresh Air will be here. Thanks for joining us. Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV, watch a new primetime special, Tavis Smiley Reports, with a one-on-one with Hillary Clinton. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talks with host Tavis Smiley about her first year as America's chief diplomat, with exclusive access to a State Department diplomatic mission to the Middle East. Watch Tavis Smiley Reports Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. 36 degrees in downtown Columbus, steady temperatures this afternoon in the mid-30s, and then rain and a rain-snow mix moves in this afternoon. Cloudy skies tonight with a chance of snow overnight, an accumulation of less than half an inch, and a low of 25 degrees. Cloudy for Tuesday with a chance of another half an inch of snow and a high of 30 for Tuesday.
Support for WOSU comes from Marburn Academy, a forward-thinking school for bright ADHD and dyslexic students inviting the community to a winter admission open house January 31st from 1 to 4. Information on how to register at marburnacademy.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest today, Bert Logan. He is the executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. He joined the society just in December. He was hired last September, however. His most previous job was with the USS Constitution Museum in Massachusetts, in Boston. You can't walk around Boston without tripping over something historical. I've been there a few times, and it's delightful. Ohio is not exactly the same sort of obvious treasure trove of historical artifact, and I was wondering, we're coming up on that sesquicentennial of the Civil War. What role does Ohio play in that when it comes to celebrating, I guess, if you want to use a, maybe that's the wrong word.
Well, we
recognizing.
Say recognizing, commemorating, are the appropriate terms.
Yeah.
Well, currently Ohio played a pivotal role during the Civil War, and while the Historical Society is developing its plan still at this time, we want to clearly focus on Ohio's contributions, but also on the impact that the war had in terms of its lingering impact on upon Ohio as a state, upon immigration back into the North, and particularly upon the emancipation and what all that meant in terms of African Americans. So we want to take a very broad approach to the commemoration of the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, and not only look at the battles themselves, but also the results and what emanated from the Civil War that in many ways continues to impact even today our society.
A committee's been named. What are they doing? What are they going to do?
Actually, they have their first meeting Thursday, so I can probably answer that question a little better on Friday morning. But
what are the hopes and dreams then of the committee?
Well, I think that the hopes and dreams will be that they will give substance to just what I described. How can we get a type of commemoration in place that will be widely recognized and draw out the contributions of people throughout the state? Yes, in no way neglecting the soldiers and the generals and the officers who fought, but what were the contributions from the home front mm-hmm. of wives and family members, and equally important, what was the lasting effect, particularly on the African-American community coming out of the Civil War?
Is the Underground Railroad going to be a component of all of that?
It most definitely will be, yes.
Okay. We had a question caller wanted to know about the federal government's mandate that Native American artifacts and bones be reburied in traditional sites and wondered how the Ohio Historical Society accomplishes that feat.
Well, we're working in conjunction with the federally mandated NAGPRA, that's the Native American Graves Repatriation Act, and we're seeking guidance from them on how to properly return remains that are in the Society's collection at this point. We have correspondence underway with various tribes. There are no federally recognized tribes within Ohio, but yet we do have a dialogue underway with some of the tribes that have now been relocated from Ohio. And as those as that correspondence, communication, dialogue continues, we will get more guidance on how to properly repatriate these items.
It is strange in Ohio that there are no federally recognized tribes in Ohio. I mean, obviously, it was populated heavily at one point. Being from Michigan, where they're all, you know, it's a common mm-hmm. Part of the political and the physical scenario. How does that – is that surprising to you or and how does that maybe hamper your efforts to do these sorts of things?
Well, I think that it was surprising as I began to learn more about the state's history. I would have assumed erroneously coming mm-hmm. in that there would be federally recognized tribes within the state. I think it just adds another layer of complexity to this issue, which is complex to begin with. But most of all, we want to do what's right. We want to do what's honorable. We want to do what's within the letter and the spirit of the law, and that's what we'll continue to strive to accomplish.
I was reading about some digs that the Ohio Historical Society has going on around the state. I think was one of them involving the Civil War encampments. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm getting a shaking of the head. But they do have digs going on in the state?
Yes, we have field schools.
Okay. So what are those like and how are those funded? They're called field schools?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How are those funded?
I have to be very honest, Ann, and say I haven't yet.
I stumped Bert Logan finally. Okay.
But if you invite me back in a few months, I will have an answer for you.
Yeah. You know, it's always a learning experience for me, too, so no hard feelings on that score. We have a call. If you'd like to call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Henry, you're on the air.
Okay. My question is, how quickly could the Historical Society put together a small exhibit of some small document, which essentially are just suitable for a one-day exhibit?
Is this something you have? Is this personal, Henry, or are you just talking like theoretically?
It's personal. I would lend it to the Historical Society for one day. I would not give it to Historical Society or the Smithsonian permanent possession.
Okay, well, let's see what Bert says about that just in general. Thanks, Henry.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Well, one of the things that we always have to balance is how do we make best use of our staff and the time that we have? And in order to invest time to do an exhibit, I think we probably would look for it to be up a bit longer. But even more so than that, we would have to look at the appropriateness of the material and exactly what we think its public public value and public receptivity would be.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Henry?
Well, no.
Well, he just said it just kind of depends. So maybe you need to call them and talk about it specifically with them.
Would I talk to?
You can, I tell you what, Henry, if you will call my office, we will make sure that you get sent to the right person. And that number is 614-297-2350.
Okay. Thanks, Henry.
297-2350.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thanks. Do you get a lot of calls? Is that typical in your business to get calls from individuals with things, you know, artifacts that they want to share?
Oh, absolutely.
How do you handle those kind of things?
Well, the bulk of our collection has been privately donated from individuals, and we rely upon that to continue to have the collection build over time because we're not just about the 18th or the 19th century. We're already 10 years beyond the 20th century, so we have to be very actively considering what is available for collection. Our staff looks at the material. Our curators make an informed judgment on either the rarity of the item or the commonality. So often, it's the common items from the 17th and 18th and 19th centuries that have not survived more so than the rare item. So it goes through an evaluation process, and eventually before a committee of the curators who make the decision on accepting it into the collection.
When you come into a job like this, is it appropriate for you to be setting priorities about what you would like to do, or is it really you're sort of an executor, you execute what's already coming down the pike?
Well, it's a balance. Clearly, there are many plans and projects underway that have been carefully thought out with a lot of years of input. But at the same time, I think that it's incumbent upon any new CEO to think about the organization and where he or she sees it moving into the future. So I'm trying to do a balance of certainly not turning away from what's underway, but yet saying maybe we should rethink this area or perhaps this might be tweaked a little bit differently so that it's sort of a hybrid combination moving forward.
We have an email. If you'd like to email us, you can go to allsides@wosu.org. The email is from June. She writes, I just heard a caller say that a birthday party was held at the Society. Would they also consider a wedding reception? That would be a dream location. And so what about that, Bert? Are those kind of events?
We have a moratorium right now on wedding receptions because of this period of time that we're in for the renovation and reconstruction of the Collections Learning Center. But we will return, hopefully, to this practice after the year's up. But right now, we just are unable to accommodate them.
Just to remind listeners, my guest is Bert Logan. He is the new executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. He is not from Ohio. He recently spent the last 14 years in Massachusetts as president of the USS Constitution Museum. Very different. Like I said earlier, you can't walk around Boston without bumping into something historical. You turn around and it's, you know, Paul Revere's grave and it's the lighthouse. It's this, it's that. How does Ohio measure up to that kind of experience?
I think it's apples and oranges. Clearly, Boston and Massachusetts were very active at the time of the American Revolution, but Ohio wasn't around at the time of the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. And it's always been my sense that one has to embrace and hold the local heritage, the local culture, the local history. To the people of Ohio, the things that happened here are just as important, just as worthy of preservation as the things that happened in Boston or Philadelphia or New York or anywhere. And I think it's that historical mosaic that that makes the study of our past so exciting, because regardless of where you go throughout the nation, you begin to see how each community, how each state has contributed not only individually but to the nation as a whole.
Now, where have you been? You were most recently in Boston and Massachusetts.
Right.
Before that?
Prior to that, I was the director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. And then my first professional job was at the Wyoming Historical and Geological Society, not in the state of Wyoming, but in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. We have a call, 614-292-8513. If you'd like to give us a call, we have a few more minutes left. Jean, you're on the air.
Hi. Welcome to Columbus. I wanted to ask if you had an idea of whether anyone would like a World War I uniform. It's wool. We have the leggings, the jacket, the hat. It's in perfect condition. And we just didn't know what to do with it. It belonged to an ancestor.
You mentioned earlier the collections, but it's called the collections department. Is that what it's called?
The curatorial the collection services department. Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's always something that we're interested to learn about. I would say in general, as a general rule, we look very carefully at uniforms simply because there were so many that have been handed down through families. But yet at the same time, we want to make sure that we do have representative samples. So I think the best thing to do, Gene, would be, again, to call the Historical Society. And I believe Kim, who's with me, is looking up the number. No. Let me just give you the same number that I gave a moment ago. That's quite all right.
You'll be getting a few.
Yeah, okay.
I just tuned in. So
sure. Let me repeat the number, if I may. It's 614-297-2350, and they will refer you to the Collection Service Department.
Okay. And is there a website, too? We could post it on the web?
Yes.
On our website?
It's www.ohiohistory.org. And I would just mention that we have opened or came online with a new website, a new portal, a week or so back. And one of the goals that we want to achieve is to really be the Google of Ohio history, that by going to the ohiohistory.org site, you can learn about anything related to Ohio's history, both ongoing current events at other historical societies, sites around the state, as well as the past.
Okay, and
thank you,
Gene. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. If you've just joined us, my guest is Bert Logan. He is the executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. He will be with us for about five more minutes, maybe six, maybe seven, if I get it right. You can go to WOSU.org and / all sides and find that email address as well, ohiohistory.org, also the number 614-297-2350. We have an email. If you have an email for us, give us send it to allsides@wosu.org. It's from Dick. He says, Timeline is one of the best magazines in the country. Please talk a little about Timeline's future in the financial crisis. It's, of course, the Historical Society's magazine.
That's right. We have received special funding privately raised to support Timeline for the rest of this year. And our intent and goal is to keep that funding coming. It's not at this point coming out of the public appropriated funds that we were discussing earlier. And to the degree that we're able to raise private funds for the publication of Timeline, we certainly intend to continue it forward.
Okay. We were talking about how Ohio kind of measures up, and one thing that's very, very different from where you came from, which is in Boston, is the size. It's just the sheer size and the population and the number of major urban centers must kind of complicate things, because there's county historical societies, there are community historical societies. How do you keep track of all of it? And what have you learned since you arrived?
I've learned that it is very complex.
Taken me about 20 years.
Yes, and most of all, I'm looking forward to moving around the state, or traveling around the state, I should say, getting to know the local historical societies, the rich resources that are maintained at the local and municipal level. And I think that's what makes this job so interesting, as well as the role and the mission of the Ohio Historical Society, how to help coordinate, how to be a service to the local agencies and the local governments and the local historical societies.
We were talking earlier about the renovation coming up, and I was struck at another point that Holly Zachariah made in a recent Columbus Dispatch story, that how the renovation ends up will be largely up to the visitors and who will preview proposed exhibits and displays and offer feedback. And I was kind of wondering, if you're surveying folks who are already there, how do you know it would attract folks who aren't going there? How are you figuring that out?
Well, I think one of the rules that, that most successful organizations follow is that, first of all, you want to make sure that you're serving the customers that you have, mm-hmm. that it's much easier to maintain and to have a customer return than it is to draw a new customer. That said, we don't want to become exclusive, or we don't want to overlook the needs of other visitors that may be coming to the museum or to the historical center. So we'll be continuing to look at ways that we can get that input from others outside of our actual visitors themselves.
And then coming up this year, what's in store for the 125th celebration of the Historical Society, given that you're going through this renovation and that sort of thing? What can people look for?
Well, we're going to, again, we're beginning to get those plans in place. We hope to have a bit more lined up within the spring. We're going to have a free day in March, on March 13th, and there'll be other...
At the Ohio Historical Center.
Yes.
Saying Ohio Historical is tough to do.
Right.
You're saying it over and over again.
It
doesn't roll off the tongue as easy as you might think. So the Ohio Historical Center will have a free day on March 13th. What else? I mean, how do you celebrate something like this? Is 125 years, is that such a big deal?
Well, it certainly is. If you do the math, we were founded in 1885, one of the earliest state historical organizations. And it's interesting that as one looks across the country, that the more prominent and successful and larger state historical societies came about primarily in the Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Why do you think?
I think in large part it may have been the sort of the populous identity. Looking to preserve the heritage, that perhaps there was a different feel for the things that were beginning to pass. And while there are wonderful historical repositories in the eastern seaboard states, many of the state historical societies, Massachusetts, Virginia, those tend to be more private organizations than publicly funded or public-private partnership.
Okay. We're just about out of time. We have one quick email from Mike. For the caller with the World War I uniform, she may also want to check with Mott's Military Museum in Groveport. Okay, we're like a clearinghouse now, and that's just fine. My guest today has been Bert Logan. He is the executive director of the Ohio Historical Society. Bert, welcome to Columbus. Welcome to Ohio, and thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Ann, and I look forward to coming back when I have a little more under my belt in terms of knowledge and experience, but it's been wonderful this morning, and thank you so much for having me.
You bet. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.